Welcome to the Golf Improvement Podcast, episode 13.
Welcome to the podcast for golf lovers and enthusiasts who are looking to take their games to new heights. Dedicated to custom club fitting, short game improvement, and effective practice to improve your golf game. This is the Golf Improvement Podcast with your host, Tony Wright.
Hello, this is Tony Wright from Game Improvement Golf in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, with the Golf Improvement Podcast, dedicated to bringing you useful information on custom club fitting, short game improvement, and effective practice techniques to take your game to new heights. It has been a really fun past few weeks. A new grandson, Elliot Gavin Pierce, was born on October 8th. This past weekend went to a wedding in Pittsburgh for my nephew and his beautiful wife, and we had a lot of fun. Roughly 2 weeks ago, though, I was at the 9th Annual Association of Golf Club Fitting Professionals Roundtable. This is the 8th one of these I attended. Two of my really good friends, Dan Wilt from Link to the Links in Columbia, Tennessee, and Bill Weitzel from Conquest Custom Golf in Cincinnati, Ohio, both achieved their Masters of Club Fitting designation as a result of taking their exam through a big presentation they made at this round table. Both of these guys will be on some of my future podcasts within the next month or two, talking about what they do in club fitting, and I'm excited to get them to do that. The other thing that was really neat about this roundtable is there were 8 new people there who hadn't been at past roundtables, who are just getting into custom club fitting and learning the ropes. So it was fun to see them get engaged in the meeting, and I know based on a lot of their feedback that they learned quite a lot, and it's good to get other people who see the value of custom club fitting and want to help golfers play their best. But in many ways, maybe the most exciting thing for me about the meeting would be, I guess, summed up in 1 year and 21 days. And that's the time until the next roundtable 10. Although from now until then, we'll be doing a lot of things related to the topic of that roundtable. And that topic of the topic of roundtable 10, which is kind of a milestone, anything you've been able to do 10 times, I think, is a milestone, will be the connection between the golf swing and custom club fitting. To me, it is very important when I do a fitting to take some video of the golfer. Actually almost every time when I do a pre-evaluation with him, I take some fitting using a tool called Coach's Eye that's available on my iPhone. It's a great little tool for taking video, slowing it down, drawing lines, things like that. But then also during fitting, I take video at 240 frames a second of face on and down the line of the golfer. This kind of video, to me, is one of the most important elements of being a great, hopefully I'm getting to be a great custom club fitter, because I need to know and look for cues of things that could really have an impact on the fitting. There have been a lot of times when I said to the golfer, right now it's really not appropriate for you to have a fitting. You really need to take some lessons to resolve some of the things we found out from the video. But there are also, and you'll hear some of this in the podcast with Dave Tuttleman, he talked about that himself, sometimes when you can help the golfer accomplish some very simple things that can have big impacts on how they swing the golf club and how their golf clubs perform for them. So connecting and understanding more and more about the golf swing and how it relates to fitting, to me, is a huge thing in terms of at least my education to become a great custom club fitter. We talk about this almost every week, once or twice, maybe more, during our online forum discussions on the AGCP forum. And it's going to be exciting to pay a lot of attention to this at the 10th roundtable. So again, 1 year and 21 days. I'm really excited about this next one. And with that, I hope you enjoy this interview with Dave Tuttleman. This is Tony Wright with the Golf Improvement Podcast, and I'm really delighted today to get to talk with Dave Tuttleman, who I've read his stuff for quite a long time, and he's one of those people who I believe is an authority in analyzing how golf clubs really work and perform. So, Dave, thanks for doing this with me today, and welcome.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tony.
Well, Dave, let's start out. You know, I know when you get interested in things, you kind of get interested in them in a big way. I read a little bit on your site. So why don't you talk a little bit about your story in terms of getting into the world of how golf clubs work and perform?
Okay, fine. When I get into things, I get into things in a technical way, particularly. You got to understand, I'm an engineer, and it's not just what I do, it's who I am. People who really are engineers tend to look at the world in a, I see that now, how does it work or why does it do that?
Yeah.
Kind of way. And certainly that happened to me with golf once I was an engineer. Now, I guess I didn't have enough engineering background at age 12 when my dad started teaching me to feel that way about golf. So I listened to Dad, did what he taught me, and enjoyed golf. Dad was a wonderful teacher, but he wasn't a very good golfer. He was a school teacher.
Yeah.
And so by the time I was in my mid-teens, I had the same big old slice that he had, swung exactly the way he had, but I had a real good time at it. Managed to play with a really good golfer when I was age 20, played about half a round with him and saw things that he was doing totally differently from what I was taught. And that gave me the idea that there were better ways to swing a golf club than the way I was taught. So I've been unlearning bad habits ever since then.
Yeah.
Anyway, I kind of stopped golf when I got out of college to get started in my career. And then marriage happened, so I stayed doing almost no golf. And then kids happened, and kids take a lot of time, and golf takes a lot of time. And so I spent time with the kids, so still very little golf played. And finally, in 1986, at age 45, I started playing golf again. And by that time, I had teenage kids, and wanted them to enjoy it as much as I did. And one of my other hobbies was going to Saturday morning yard sales. Okay. So the easy way to deal with the clubs for the kids was to pick up likely looking sets of clubs at yard sales. Of course, you get a set of clubs at yard sales and you know that they aren't proper for kids.
Yeah.
And most obvious thing is you got hard, crumbly or slippery grips. And they're probably too big for young teenagers and probably too much loft on the driver, though I wasn't quite sure of that yet.
Yeah.
So I started looking for, well, how do I re-grip this club? How do I make it shorter? And in that search, I discovered that there were a few companies out there that were actually selling components. Enough components so you could start making your own clubs. What a revelation that was. I got in touch with Golfsmith and Dynacraft and Golfworks, which were the three big ones at that time.
Yeah.
And a little later, Hariko. And just had a wonderful time rebuilding clubs for my kids. Now, at that time, woods were made of wood. So you could actually change the loft on a driver if you had a big enough rasp and a file and If you were going to change it enough, you didn't have to be afraid to change the plastic face insert. So I did all those carpentry type golf repairs, but I also learned how to reshaft. I learned how to regrip, and that, you know, now I was all set so that I could build clubs. And there were books around telling you how to build clubs, and even some elementary measuring stuff, like how do you measure the length? How do you measure the swing weight? There was nothing that I found anyway on what you want to do. There's lots of how, but no why. Yeah. And being an engineer, all of a sudden, this opened a whole new corner of engineering to me. Why would you want to make a golf club heavier or lighter or more flexible? How would you measure the flex? There weren't any flex meters around at that time. Well, there were flex boards. You could mount it and map the flex, but those were pretty hard to use. So I started exercising my engineering and trying to figure things out. And I guess the first question I got really interested in from a technical point of view is, how heavy do you want the club head to be? It's a trade-off. If you make it heavier, you get better momentum transfer from what velocity you've got. But a heavier head probably slows down the club head speed. So which is more important, the loss of club head speed or the gain in momentum transfer? And I wrote lots and lots of equations. Some made sense and some led nowhere. And I was off and running on the analysis of golf clubs. Anything interesting I found, I would post on rec.sport.golf. The internet was around before the web.
Yeah.
Rec.sport.golf was a news group, a forum pre-web that talked about golf. And it was really the only place for golf discussion on the internet. And I used to post short articles there anytime I found out something interesting about golf clubs. And I was surprised who was reading me. Pretty soon I started getting offers from small companies to do some consulting with them.
Huh.
By 1996, I had gotten a employment offer from TaylorMade. And so at that point, I was pretty sure I could do this thing. And when I retired in 2002, I started doing consulting.
Okay.
And that's how I got where I am now.
Well, there's some things I didn't realize. And, you know, the rec.sport.gov.com, I can't remember, but was that sort of a predecessor then in a way to the Spine Talkers group? Or?
Actually, it existed almost in parallel with Spine Talkers. Okay. I joined Spine Talkers probably in the mid to late 90s, and I joined Rec Sport Golf in the late 80s. But they coexisted through much of the 90s.
Yeah, interesting.
And they still coexist. But anyway, that's how I got here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, I've got a PhD in engineering myself, but what fascinates me about what you do is that it's almost all, you find out interesting things based on what I guess I would call first principles, okay? It's not like, I don't see much of, you know, although some of your analysis, I'm sure there's probably some computer calculations, but a lot of it is force equals mass times acceleration and, you know, a whole range of things like that. And it's interesting what you can find out by what I would call, well, they're simple, but knowing what to do is more important. Yeah.
I'm pretty amazed how much you can learn just from the basic first principles. And then if you add some simple computer analyses or computer syntheses.
Yeah.
Many of them things you can just do with Excel spreadsheets. You can go a long way to understanding what the golf club and what the swing are doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, your site is loaded with things for people to read. You know, we don't have all day to talk about that. It's too bad. But, you know, from all of these kinds of analyses that you've done, what are some of the top two or three areas that you think are most important for people to understand based on your different analyses for helping golfers to play better?
Well, actually, that comes in a couple of different flavors.
Okay.
A lot of what I write is not for the end user, for the golfer. It's for the custom club fitter or for the club manufacturer. And I think maybe the biggest contribution that I made, particularly early on, was get a bunch of custom club fitters started in the right direction.
Yeah.
I was really surprised over the years how many club fitters that I had met started out with the club design notes that I wrote back when I was on Rec Sport Golf. For instance, I remember running into a guy on a round of golf who was talking about, you know, I had these golf clubs custom made for me about half a year ago, and I love them. They're wonderful. And I asked him about it and where he got them and who made them for him. And he said, well, it was a friend of mine who is now starting a side business in club fitting. And he learned from these notes that he found on the internet. And I asked him where it turned out to be my articles.
Yeah.
So that's always very rewarding. But I think getting custom club fitters out there helping people may have been my biggest and certainly my earliest contribution. See, other things. Moment of inertia matching.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's the biggest help that I've come up with. I know Tom Wishon is pushing moment of inertia matching very heavily, and Tom is a really good evangelist for things like moment of inertia matching and club fitting in general. He has the voice and the media to get out there and get the message across. But when Tom got into moment of inertia matching, I was the first person he contacted because I had been doing it for about 5 years at that point. That initial investigation that I mentioned about, do you want the club head to be heavier or lighter, turned out to lead to some moment of inertia matching that I did with a fellow named TJ Field, who was a PhD candidate at the time. And he's a computer professional now, but this was like 1994. And I started building moment of inertia matched clubs in 1995. And I think this may have been my biggest contribution to helping golfers play better. Over the years, I've continued to come back to moment of inertia matching and trying different things with it, and each time I learn more about it. But I think that was a big thing.
Well, you know, I just got back from the AGCP annual roundtable, and the last day they spent was teaching a lot of. There were like 8 or 9 new people, and teaching them how to build the moment of inertia. And you know, personally, that's what I've done for the last 5 or 6 years, and had. You know, very few times when somebody didn't like the feel of that compared to the, you know, and the type of performance they get compared to trying to swing weight match clubs. It's pretty amazing.
I don't know if you've looked at my site within the last probably 3 or 4 years where I talk about how I heft match clubs. But what I have been doing for some years now is going out with lead tape and clubs of roughly the right length and roughly the right flex, and have people hit the longest and the shortest club that they are going to have in their set, maybe four or five iron and a pitching wedge. Pitching wedge might not be the shortest club in the set, but it's the shortest full swing club in the set.
Yes. Yeah.
And have them hit it, and I have a roll of lead tape with me, and keep adding lead tape to it until they get to hit the most consistent shots. Not necessarily the longest.
Yeah.
Remember, this is irons.
Yeah.
So what you really want from your irons is not maximum distance, but predictable distance. So get them hitting so that they're hitting consistently as possible. Then whatever lead tape is on it, I take it back to the shop, measure the swing weight of the long club and the short club, draw a straight line on a graph between them, and build the clubs to that whatever slope that comes out. And in confirmation of what you found, that slope is very often between 1 and 1.5 swing weight points per inch.
Yeah.
Which means it's very close to moment of inertia matched.
Yeah.
And I started out not with any notion this guy should be swing weight matched or this guy should be moment of inertia matched. Just let's see. And it comes out to be moment of inertia matched.
That's a neat way to test for that. I didn't catch that. I know I've read all your articles, but I guess I missed that part. But I'll go back and look at it. It's pretty amazing. You know, I found some things on when I wrote this little book that I wrote. And you know, back in the 1890s, they tried the moment of inertia match. In fact, when they started building clubs, but didn't know how to measure it. So, but. Hopefully more and more golfers going to keep learning about that. I know, you know, from folks like you and Tom and other club fitters.
You're an engineer, so you would appreciate that.
Yeah.
But when Bobby Jones was getting his clubs built with hickory shafts, so this would have been like the 1920s maybe.
Yeah.
His club maker was building the clubs so that over the set, they had a constant head weight times the square of the length. Sound like moment of inertia to you?
Yeah, it sure does. Boy, that's amazing. Well, I know you mentioned it a little bit, you know, that you're applying some of what you're doing to your own game. Obviously, we talked about some of the things related to MOI, but, you know, what other elements of the things that you've been doing in terms of analyses have you been applying to your game? And I guess your sons play, or do they still play some?
Very little.
Very little? Oh, well.
About once a year, our Father's Day round.
There you go. Well, but talk a little bit about then how you're applying, you know, other elements of what you do to your game and to, you know, some of the folks you play with.
Actually, that's a very interesting question. And I don't know whether this happens to you too, being an engineer, but I'm a much better engineer than athlete. And
I'd say I'm probably the same way. Yeah.
And one of the problems with engineers is they think too much. And they think too much about the details of the swing. And it's really hard for an engineer to play golf well, because most good golfers want you to empty your mind or just focus on the target, not all the details of what you're doing with the swing. And I can't get that out of my mind. So yeah. I am probably limited in how good I can get just from the fact that I think too much about it and I'm not a great athlete. But I do practice a lot, and that goes in the right direction. The right kind of practice goes in the right direction. Even so, I do find that that by understanding the physics and being able to visualize what I'm doing does sometimes help. And the things that I've learned I need to visualize are lag and a light grip. Just don't hit at the ball. Allow it to release. So the sequence is just so important. And I found that the way to get sequence for myself is to think of the effort from the ground up. If I can keep the effort in the hips and out of the arms and hands, then I will play well. And that comes from that lesson there comes from probably something as early as Cochran and Staub's work.
Right.
But all the mathematicals of the golf swing say that's really what you want to do. The hands don't want to be actively releasing, just hinging. And finding some way to do that is the best thing that a golfer can do. Talk about people I play with. One thing that I've been able to improve with people I play with, let me start out by saying I do not like to give anybody a swing thought during a round of golf.
Oh, yeah, that's a good way to lose friends, right?
You don't ever, ever want to do something on the golf course that you haven't practiced. But I have found one thing that pops up fairly often on the golf course that can be fixed right there in real time. And that is if somebody is hitting a push slice, a ball that starts right and continues right.
Yeah.
If you understand the ball flight rules, you know that that's caused by a face that's open and probably not a terrible swing path.
Right. It's a little bit into out probably, right? Yeah.
Might be into out, might be just straight down the line.
Yeah.
If it starts right and curves right, the face is open to the path. By the way, I have an article on that on my website. It has to do with, I guess it's the nine ball flights. Is the name.
I was looking at that this morning before I got on Skype with you. Yeah.
And at the end of that, I talk about what the different flights are caused by. And a push slice can be caused by just an open face with a really good swing otherwise. So what I do there is I ask people, address the ball the way you would normally. Now, how many knuckles do you see on your left hand?
Huh.
Well, why don't you try seeing one more knuckle than you already see? Basically, I'm strengthening their grip.
Yeah.
So that the club face is more likely to come through square. It'll certainly be more closed than what it was initially. And I'm amazed how many golfers just during that round of golf were able to fix the push slice in real time.
That's probably been the biggest thing that's changed my golf game in the last year. I had a friend from Germany who corresponds with me, who's part of AGCP, and he suggested that. It's totally amazing how that can help. I agree with you. Yeah. Well, this has been very interesting today, and I'm going to learn a few things about going back to some other sites and things like that. The one you mentioned earlier, and also got to do a little more looking at Bobby Jones about MOI. I think that's good. But as we're kind of getting to the end, any other particular things that you want to mention for golfers in terms of things that you suggest they can do to play their best?
Sure. The most important thing that my work points to is that you want properly fitted clubs. And having them fit you is way more important than the brand name or the model. I'm always amused by the guy who walks onto the first tee and says, these clubs are exactly the clubs that Tiger Woods uses. And I know what's coming after that. I know that he's not going to play at all well because he doesn't have Tiger Woods' game. Yeah. Nobody but Tiger Woods has Tiger Woods' game. And so he ought to have clubs that are fitted to him, not to Tiger Woods. And it's always a disaster when somebody walks up with that beginning. So get your clubs fit properly. And one thing that most people don't realize is part of proper fitting is set makeup. So many people are playing with a set of clubs that really aren't the ones that they should be playing with. They should be switching, for instance, from the irons to the hybrids at some point. And maybe they are already switching, but it's a much too long a club point. For instance, I have both a 4-iron and a 4-hybrid. And depending on how I'm hitting my irons, it'll depend on which one I have. But from the 5-iron up, I have irons. From the 3 down, I have hybrids.
Yeah.
And either a 4-hybrid or a 4-iron, depending on how I'm doing. Things like that. Should you get a driver at all? I know quite a few people who play much better if they leave the driver in the trunk of the car and tee off with the 3-wood.
Yeah.
Should you be playing with a lob wedge? I have a lob wedge, but I find that it's a club that you want to use only when no other club in the bag will do the job, because unless you practice a lot with a lob wedge, it's going to hurt more than help. So questions like that, what clubs should I be carrying, is part of the fitting decision.
Well, Dave, thanks a lot today. And, you know, before I sort of end, you know, when you do any additional new analyses that you think are really interesting to talk about, I'm always here to listen. So if you want to do another session like this, I've really enjoyed it.
I'd love to do it, Tony.
Yeah. Well, to read a lot more of great information on golf club technology, go to www.tuttleman.com and click on the golf and golf technology link. And again, Dave, thanks very much for talking with me and with golfers today. I think it was excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Really enjoyed it.
Take care.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Taking your game to new heights. www.gameimprovementgolf.com.
Dave, thanks again. I really enjoyed listening to you during this interview. And a reminder for all of you listening to this podcast to look in the show notes and see the link to Dave Tuttleman's website and the many great articles, great and interesting articles on his website related to golf performance improvement. I wanted to mention one thing before I tell you what's going to happen in 2 weeks. Starting tomorrow, actually, I'm going to do some major modifications to my website, start to put in what's called a WordPress theme that hopefully it will make my website even easier to use for folks. If all things go well, it won't take too long to do that, but I do expect it to be done before the time of the next podcast in about 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, you'll get the opportunity to listen to Dr. Mark Guagnoli, who's an expert in helping golfers and others to compete in high-performance situations, and who is also the author of a terrific book, Practice to Learn, Play to Win. I look forward to hearing what Mark has to say to help all of us play our best golf. See you again in 2 weeks.
Game Improvement Golf, your source of information and inspiration to become an exceptional golfer now. www.gameimprovementgolf.com